Hey, this is Ed. So this is a podcast, is that right?
This is.
Okay. We're officially podcasting right now. That's awesome.
This
is Straight from the Cutter's Mouth.
Welcome to Straight from the Cutter's Mouth, a retina podcast. At least once a week, we aim to bring you insights and perspectives from the world of vitreoretinal surgery. I'm your host, Dr. Jay Schreeder. Today, on our special episode 201, I'm rejoined by the very first guest on the program, Dr. Alan Ho from Wills Eye Hospital. He and I discuss some breakthroughs in therapy for macular degeneration and what's on the horizon in terms of gene therapy, as well as recent study results for dry age-related macular degeneration. Remember, a list of financial disclosures will be attached in the episode description, and you can find this episode, all their podcast episodes, on the American Academy of Ophthalmology website to claim CME credits. Simply click on the link in the episode description. Straight from the Cutter's Mouth is now privileged to be rejoined by our very first guest, now back for episode 201, Dr. Alan Ho. Dr. Ho is professor of ophthalmology at Thomas Jefferson University in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, where he's also a partner at Mid-Atlantic Retina and heads the retina research division there at Wills Eye Hospital. Dr. Ho, thanks so much for coming back and for your support.
It's great to be back, and congratulations on the success of this way to communicate to the community. I think people are finding it very, very helpful, Jay.
Well, I hope so. And it's people like you and the other guests who come on who really make it powerful and impactful. We're going to spend a little time this episode just talking about macular degeneration therapies. We had a recent episode about things that are kind of in trial for dry AMD. We're going to talk about some things that were discussed at the Academy meeting, both presented on the podium, discussed outside the meeting. And we're going to talk a little bit about two things. The first thing is gene therapy for macular degeneration, wet AMD specifically. So, Dr. Ho, give us some background. When did the conversation about gene therapy for wet AMD first kind of take hold in the community?
The conversation for gene therapy for wet macular degeneration began several years ago. If you think about the first generation gene therapy trials that didn't work, we're now in what I would call the early second chapter of gene therapy for wet age-related generation, specifically clinical trials like Regenix Biosciences, anti-VEGF gene therapy for wet AMD in previously treated patients. And their transgene is essentially a ranibizumab. And Adverum's therapy for wet AMD is also an anti-VEGF, and it is very similar to aflibercept. The main differences, aside from the transgene product, are that Adverum is delivered via an intravitreal injection, and to date, Regenix Bio has been with a subretinal injection. So I think the conversation began with first-generation trials of Genzyme, Oxford Biomedica, Avalanche, that showed general safety in this group of patients with, let's say, subretinal injections or intravitreal injections, but we're talking about being smarter. And I think that's the theme, wet and dry AMD, these new interventions that we're doing things smarter, better vectors, better transgenes, proven transgene products like aflibercept, essentially.
Yeah, that's really well stated. And let's talk a little bit. Obviously, there are huge advantages to intravitreal therapy over subretinal gene therapy. Last time you were on, we talked a little bit about for hereditary retinal disease. You know, they were looking at intravitreal. I think ProQR was looking at intravitreal injections. You kind of talked about the challenges of intravitreal therapy versus subretinal therapy. Although I see most patients and most providers prefer an in-office procedure over just taking a patient to OR. I mean, let's just kind of reiterate. You know, using an intravitreal therapy that's going to long-term influence the function of the outer retina and RPE, you know, there's definitely issues in terms of how that therapy can be incorporated and absorbed, correct?
Yes, that's true. There's a huge advantage to, I would say, any in-office procedure that would support gene therapy for a retinal disease. That includes, obviously, intravitreal injections, which we're all very familiar with. but I also begin to think about and expand that definition to include a suprachoroidal injection, which based on some good early work from Peter Campuchero and Glenn Yu, showing that a suprachoroidal injection can also demonstrate transfection and translation of protein in, of a gene product away from the area of the suprachoroidal injection. So it's an in-office procedure as well. Obviously, something that's done in the office for very, very common disease that we're talking about now has a huge advantage in terms of lower barriers to adoption. Suprachoroidal injection, though, with gene therapy is, has been kind of time-tested in a way for safety. It potentially has less immunogenicity in terms of inducing an immune response or eliciting an immune response. So I give up on subretinal gene therapy just yet, but it's great the way the science, the translational science is moving to look at different ways to deliver therapies.
Yeah. And in terms of, you know, right now, where do, just to update our listeners, where do REGENXBIOM and Adverum stand in terms of phase of trial? What do we have to, what steps do they need to go through for these drugs to be available on the market for retinal specialists?
Yeah. So in chapter two of gene therapy for wet AMD, very early, phase one study. Adverum has six subjects that are and they're moving forward and have reported their data and results at multiple meetings now this summer and fall. So it's early, and I say that, in my opinion, it's showing these patients that are previously treated for neovascular with frequent anti-VEGF injections in the office, we're seeing a definite anatomic biologic response that you would expect from an anti-VEGF agent, kind of demonstrating that the science is working. They've had some issues with intraocular inflammation, some way not surprising. You deliver 100 billion viral vectors, gene copies into the vitreous, 10 to the 11th kind of order of magnitude. But they're tweaking through immune suppression to work through that. And I think they're gonna make some progress, time will tell. So they had reported on six subjects, and they're moving forward with some modifications. The REGENXBIOM story is more advanced, still early. In that program, been patients and 42 subjects have been enrolled in that, some of many of whom had followed up for over a year. And what we're seeing in that program is very good safety for subretinal injection of this A8 viral vector with the ranibizumab essential, very similar to ranibizumab transgene. And we're seeing some interesting results on this group of frequent flyer previously treated patients, where once you get to a dose in, let's say, cohort three, half the patients are not requiring rescue injections over, seeing similar effects in the higher ends of cohorts four and five. So the program is also, it's more mature. There's a lot of key learnings going on, and the program's going to be moving forward with next phases of phase two for AMD.
You know, one of the things you brought up that's interesting is this idea of immunosuppression, right? And I had this conversation with another doctor. It's interesting to think from a patient perspective, and I think we don't know the answer to this because it's never been studied, but it would be interesting to see patients who need injections, let's say, every 2 or 3 months or even monthly for their wet AMD for control. You know, what degree of immunosuppression they'd be willing to do in order to maintain without injections and maintain their sight from wet macular degeneration. So, or future gene therapies for retinal disease. So, for example, you know, and there's a different scale of immunosuppression. Would you want to be on 5 milligrams of prednisone for your life?
Yeah, good question. I would say maybe not, but it may not be necessary. This some of these immune response, drops. I think tapering drops over several weeks would be a very simple solution. So when we talk about how we're going to need to do immune suppression, for example, on the Regenix study, which is a subretinal injection, is a doctor steroid injection at the end of surgery and then just the usual topical drops. No systemic immunosuppression at all. I suspect that's because of the relatively higher immune privilege in the subretinal space. So ocular immune privilege probably is relative in different areas, probably more immune privileged in the retinal space, and then perhaps less immune privileged with an intravitreal injection, and then maybe less because of its exposure to the core blood flow and therefore systemic exposure. So what's acceptable would be great, systemic maybe, but hopefully not at all.
You know, switching gears a little bit, recently we heard about in the news, there was this report of dry AMD advancement with Zimura, which is a drug with Iveric Bio as kind of the head company, doing well in phase two for dry macular degeneration. And this is something patients and providers may be listening or reading about. This was a complement inhibitor, but with an interesting history. Dr. Ho, tell us a little bit about Zimura, your thoughts on complement inhibition, and where you see this kind of going forward.
Yeah, so there's recently been some treatment for complement inhibition after disappointment with the lampalizumab phase three trial. I think another theme I would say is that I think the approaches for advanced atrophic AMD are getting smarter and getting key learnings from the earlier trials that may not have performed as well. If you're thinking about the Zimura trial, that is a trial with a C5 there. It's not therapy, it's injectable. And that's a trial now known as Iveric. And there's a history of C5 not working with Alexion's product that is being used to treat nocturnal hematuria. History against C5 inhibition, but the Iveric trial with Zimura is kind of interesting. For example, so foveal evolving geographic atrophy. So maybe study design picking patients that are less advanced in their disease that may allow these to the intervention to show another way to say it is if you're trying to make a difference and the barn is already burned down and the animals are gone, you don't have a chance. But if you're smarter at picking, you're going to put out the fire maybe to reconstruct or stabilize the barn and keep the animals. So one way of looking at it, you have to look a little more at the details of the inclusion trial, inclusion criteria for the trials to see whether or not this is comparable, say, to the Apellis information. The Apellis, phase three trials in parallel are bringing love back into immunotherapy for advanced atrophic complement in addition to C3 inhibitor. And so we'll see. Factor D didn't seem to work. Genentech is coming back with large-scale phase trials with a different molecule. Not a complement inhibitor per se, but people are there are multiple shots on goal for atrophic AMD, and I think a theme again is that the trials are being designed smarter, picking better patients, maybe picking patients that are more rapid progressors based on fundus autofluorescence maybe picking specific genotypes like Gyroscope is going to do with their gene therapy for HOPD. Humira is also another company using gene therapy for atrophic AMD and wet AMD. And their thesis is that we're not going to work up on the pathway of the complement pathways. We're going to go right to the way that causes destructions or bacteria.
You know, for your patients who have a strong, I'm sure you get this question a lot, who have a very strong family history of macular degeneration, or who are bringing their parents in and they're afraid of losing vision, you know, this is looking down the line, but if we do get therapies that are available, I mean, how early do you think we'll be taking patients for treatment?
That's a really good question. So let's give an example of a patient themselves with one eye that's atrophic, but the fellow eye, which you know will likely pass sequentially, doesn't meet criteria for treatment. Let's say they're just evolving GA. Would you want to begin treating that eye? It depends on the burden of treatment is. We're very familiar with that. And the method of treatment, which would be so for intravitreal induction. So I tried systemic infusion, and I think it was actually, and that burden becomes higher. So it depends upon how good the data are and what the burden of treatment is out of delivery.
That's true. No, and I think it's exciting. You know, it's interesting to think about what we will do from a physician burden standpoint. It's a good problem to have, but when we do finally have dry AMD treatments, you know, the same problem was faced by the field 15 years ago with, you know, Lucentis and Avastin when they came out, and it's be a good problem to have treatment, but it's going to be an issue in terms of delivering care to all these patients.
You're absolutely right. And what we've seen in wet AMD is if you get these and get it early, as in many medical conditions across all different disciplines in medicine, if you get it early and treat it, the patients do better and function better, better quality of life. Just the same thing will hold for dry AMD and atrophic AMD. We're looking at the worst patients initially because we're doing an invasive treatment with individual injection, but going earlier, is probably we're going to wind up making a difference. And then your point about how we're going to care for all these patients is absolutely on target. I don't know. We're just going to have to hire more doctors, get them out.
That's true. Again, a good problem to have. Dr. Ho, you've been super generous with your time. It's a great update for our listeners and great to have you back. My last question is non-medical, but I'm going to ask you, Colin Kaepernick's doing this workout this weekend. Your thoughts on this? Is this a real thing? Is it a publicity stunt? Why is it happening now? It feels like a year or two too late. What do you think?
There does be an over a politics, certainly with regard to Colin Kaepernick. I think he's an elite athlete. So, you know, we'll see what happens here. The fact that some of the teams are signing up to actually be at the workout is kind of some justification for willing to consider him. And that is not the sentiment that was certainly there a couple years ago when he made his political statement.
And then my last question, the big conversation in New York is, would you rather have Danny Dimes-Jones or Sam Darnold now going forward if you're a Giants or Jets fan?
I got to go with Danny Jones. The Giants are in very bad, but Jones has a ceiling. Darnold, too. I think Jones' ceiling is higher.
Great talking to you as always, and have a great rest of your weekend.
Thanks, Jay.
Take care.
Take care.
Podcast listeners, you've listened to the podcast. Now you want the chance to come on the program yourself. So here it is. Do you remember those books, Choose Your Own Adventure, where you would pick where to go next and follow that story? Well, help us flesh out the Vitbuckle Society Complication Session at the annual meeting in March 2020.
by submitting your surgical videos of your complications in vitreoretinal surgery. These videos can be narrated or anonymous with the description to mklufas@gmail.com. That's mklufas@gmail.com. We all learn more from reviewing our mistakes as groups and with our colleagues, so this is a great learning opportunity. And two big things, the top five entries will be shown during the meeting and discussed by a panel discussion. But more importantly, if you're one of the top five entries, we'll invite you to come on the podcast for a one-on-one interview to discuss the case and learning points. The winning entry out of the five will then win a special VitBuckle Society buckle. So send your entries to mklufas@gmail.com. That's mklufas@gmail.com. Thank you. As always, you can find this episode and all other podcast episodes on our website, retinapodcast.com. That's RETINAPodcast.com. All 201 episodes, including this one, can be found there sorted by category. On the website, we also have our blog, Equal Round Reactive Lessons for Our Pupils, and you can sign up for our mailing list to get updates on the most recent episodes. Remember, you can claim CME credits for select podcasts via the American Academy of Ophthalmology website. Simply log in as a member and visit the link in the episode description. At the bottom, our links are to subscribe in the Apple Podcast Store as well as the Android Store. You can also like our Facebook page or find us in the Apple Podcast Store or Android Store directly on your mobile device. We're on Twitter at RetinaPodcast, and to contact us, click on the contact us link on our website or email us at retinapodcast@gmail.com. We love the feedback we get on things we can do better and things we are already doing well. And we also appreciate anyone who subscribes via the Android Store or Apple Store to leave your positive comments in the form of a review. Many thanks to Dr. Alan Ho for joining me. Thanks to Dr. Louis Kai, Dr. Angela Chang, and Dr. Michael Vanacosta for preparing this episode and the company publicity. Finally, thank you, listeners, for what you do on a daily basis, the patient care you provide, the articles you read and publish, and the conversations you inspire here. This is Jay Schreeder, signing off.
Good feeling.
This is straight from the cutter's mouth.
Take care. Bye-bye.